school system right now, three at Boise Elliott and one at Tubman, and I have been very taken aback by what they have been teaching from when it started, from when Mr. Trump won the presidency. They began to teach my children in the schools that Trump was a bad man long before we ever knew who and what he was. Now, I don't want to sound strange on this, but as a black man, very involved, I have, my wife is black, my children are black. I have no interest in trying to teach white people anything about my blackness or who and what we are. We know what it is in America, and we move and act accordingly. But at what point was it okay, or did the BLM flag begin to represent black thought? Because that doesn't represent black thought. That's a political movement that has been politicized right on down to Newburgh, Oregon, which is a little school and a town that's up and coming with the wine industry and the money that's being brought to this area, and now they're politicizing something for black people that don't represent, that don't represent black people. That represents white people in a politicized usage of black lives that have been killed by police, being politicized from George Floyd on, and I can call the roll. So I need you all to understand that, because you all are running a narrative that's not true to the ground.
I appreciate your perspective and point of view. We have to wrap up, and I just wanted to give some space to what you said, because that's, all black folks don't think the same. So I appreciate you calling in and, you know, just giving us that perspective. There is so much to unpack there, but unfortunately we are completely out of time. I just want to say that the BLM flag, or just seeing the words Black Lives Matter, mean different things to different people in the black community. And not everyone feels the same about it. Me personally, as a black woman, when I see it, and as the students in the Newburgh School District mentioned to them, the voices that in this piece matter the most, in my opinion, they also express the same. It gives them a sense of security, makes them feel safe in an otherwise unsafe environment. There's so much to unpack. I definitely agree with a lot of what you have to say when it comes to how much has been politicized by non-black people, and that is definitely problematic. Unfortunately, I do have to wrap up. Thank you so much for that call. Thank you so much for the perspective. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. This has been The Gap here on KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Arab Voices. Thank you so much, Althea.
Bye.
Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. In this episode of Arab Voices, I will interview Sahar Francis, director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, who is also a human rights lawyer based in Ramallah in occupied Palestine. We will talk about the thousands of Palestinian political prisoners, including women and children, held in Israeli jails. We'll talk about their ill treatment, torture, physical and mental abuse, round-the-clock interrogations, lack of food and health services, administrative detention, collective punishment, and much more. We will also talk about the great escape by six Palestinian political prisoners from one of the supposedly most secure Israeli prisons, who have been recaptured since their escape earlier this month. In addition, we will talk about the arrests made by the Palestinian Authority of some Palestinians who were protesting the murder of Palestinian activist Nizar Banat, who was killed hours after he was arrested by the Palestinian Authority forces in the West Bank. The Palestinian political prisoners issue remains as one of the major points to be resolved before a final resolution is reached between the occupier, Israel, and the occupied, Palestine. And as I mentioned earlier, the Palestinian political prisoners issue gained worldwide attention over the past couple of weeks after six Palestinian political prisoners escaped from one of the most secured Israeli prisons. Several rallies were held in solidarity with the Palestinian political prisoners in several countries over the past few days, including cities in the United States, Houston, Chicago, New York City, Minneapolis, San Francisco, and Boston. Joining us from Ramallah in occupied Palestine to talk about the Palestinian political prisoners is Sahar Francis. She is the director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, and she is also a human rights lawyer based in Ramallah. Sahar, welcome to Arab Voices.
Hi.
It's good to have you again on the show. Sahar, could you start, please, by telling our listeners more information about your organization, Ad-Damir, which is, by the way, Arabic word for conscience.
So Ad-Damir is a Palestinian non-governmental organization that was founded basically in Jerusalem 30 years ago. But we were moving to Ramallah after the establishment of the Palestinian Authority. We are focusing on the legal aid for the Palestinian political prisoners under the occupation, unfortunately as well under the Palestinian Authority, those who are arrested for political reasons. We also have a visitation program to monitor the conditions and the violations that these prisoners face in interrogation, detention centers, and prison. And we do advocacy and lobbying on behalf of the prisoners and raising awareness for the local community, on especially for students and university students, law students, and activists about the rights of prisoners and campaigning for prisoners. We have just one office based in Ramallah, and we are collaborating with other Palestinian human rights organizations. We are members in the Palestinian Non-Governmental Network and the Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council.
And I'd like to add that Ad-Damir has been a leading organization when it comes to defending Palestinian human rights, and a leading entity to defend and talk about the Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli jail. And as Sahar just mentioned, unfortunately now, those who have been arrested and held by the Palestinian Authority. Sahar, tell us more first about the Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli occupation jails. We know there are thousands of them there almost all the time.
Currently, there's around 4,700 Palestinian prisoners. They are all held in prisons, mostly inside Israel, outside of the occupied territories. Out of them, there's still around 40 Palestinian women detained in a Damon prison, and less than 200 minors arrested in mainly three prisons. Inside Israel, the number could be changing on daily basis because of the mass arrest campaigns and the releases and so on. And there are 520 more or less administrative detainees that they are arrested without any trial or specific charges. Of course, there's also journalists, students, Palestinian Legislative Council members, and political leaders and activists, human rights defenders, like the head of the health work committees, Ms. Shada Oudi, Khitam Saafin, the director of the Palestinian Women Union Committees. So Israel basically targets every Palestinian who are opposing the occupation.
You know, you mentioned some of them. There are so many Palestinians in Israeli jails that are very well known, that have been very active in the Palestinian society, like Ahmed Saadat, Secretary General of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Marwan Barghouti, Fatah leader, Khaled Jarrar, elected Palestinian parliamentarian. And as you mentioned, there are so many Palestinian legislative council also. So almost 4,700, you said, Palestinians now in Israeli jails. They are called Palestinian political prisoners. For our listeners, again, just to clarify, we're not talking about somebody who committed a crime, who stole something, and Israeli police, quote-unquote, goes and takes that person and indicts that person, like the system in the U.S. here, and puts that person in jail. These are political prisoners. Tell us more about political prisoners.
Actually, Domir defines political prisoners all those that they were arrested because of the conflict, because they were resisting actually the Israeli colonial settler regime on the occupied territories, and irrelevant if they were involved in what we call peaceful actions, demonstrations, and political activism, or if they were involved in more militant attacks or activities. Even though, according to the international law, Israel has the right to prosecute those who were involved in militant attacks, according to the international humanitarian law, but we argue that Israel has no right to prosecute thousands of Palestinian civilians, that they are students active in their universities, or journalists, or human rights defenders, or political activists, or unionists, and all these. The majority of the 4,700 prisoners currently, they are considered as civilians according to the international law, especially the Fourth Geneva Convention.
First of all, before we talk about like what kind of charges and so on, these are Palestinians from the occupied Palestinian territories. We're talking about the mainly the West Bank and occupied Jerusalem.
It's including as well those from Gaza and Palestinians from the 48 areas, because they are all held in the same security, classified as security prisoners by the Israeli prison authority.
So how does Israel, that supposedly has no jurisdiction over occupied Palestinian areas, you know, it sounds so funny, even I am talking about it, occupied Palestinian territories by Israel. How does it have a jurisdiction to go and kidnap, basically take Palestinians from their homes? Because we are seeing horror stories on TV where they go in the middle of the night or any time, they basically raid Palestinian homes, kidnap those Palestinians, and put them in Israeli jail for security purposes, political prisoners. So how do they go there so freely to do whatever they want to do in Palestinian areas?
So actually, Israel, even after signing the Oslo Agreement with the Palestinian Authority, they kept the security jurisdiction for themselves, which means they have the authority under the claim that for security reasons, they can actually enter to the main city centers, to Ramallah, Beit Lahem, and all the other Palestinian cities, and arrest people and detain them for security reasons. And this is what they are doing on daily basis, actually, not just raiding homes to arrest people, but also raiding human rights organizations, humanitarian organizations, and shutting them down, declaring them as illegal entities.
As a matter of fact, your offices, I remember Damir office in Ramallah was raided, and the Israeli occupation authorities, you know, in the middle of the night, stormed that office. They stole computers, hard drives, files, and other equipment from your own office, right?
In 2019, but in 2021, actually, in last month, they raided the Office of Defense for Children International Palestine chapter and the BSAN Research Center, the Health Work Committee's office, and the Agriculture Work Committee's office. And they declared about the two organizations, the Health Work Committee and the Agriculture Work Committee, as illegal organizations. And of course, they stole computers, confiscated files, and destroyed material in the offices.
So when Israel goes and kidnaps those Palestinians and puts them in Israeli jails under the name of security, what kind of charges does Israel bring against those Palestinians? You talked about some 200 children, minors, approximately 40 or so women there. What are those charges in the so-called Israeli legal system?
The charges vary according to the military orders from political activism. So, for example, being a member in any political party or any student movement would be a crime because all these groups are declared illegal according to the military orders. You could be just active in a university in Palestine and in cultural and studential activism, and this is would be a crime. Lately, in the last 2 years, there was an increase in attacking students from all different Palestinian universities. It could include throwing stones, sharing in demonstrations, because all demonstrations would be considered illegal. Incitement, this is the trend in the last couple of years because of the use of social media. So any kind of publication in your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram could be considered incitement to violence. It includes more serious activism, like organizing and trying to implement militant attack. But the majority of those arrested, they would be prosecuted for membership in illegal organization, incitement and political activism, and resisting the settlements or the wall, or expansion of settlement, house demolition policies, and so on. Like all those actions taking place in villages like Beita, currently like Bil'in, Na'alin, Kufr Qaddoum, all villages that suffer from the wall and the settlement, that they have the weekly demonstrations, would be systematically attacked, and people would be arrested, imprisoned for being involved in protecting their land and their property.
What is the youngest Palestinian child in Israeli jail?
Currently, it's around, like, the children there are between 14 and 18, but it could be as young as 12 because the military orders enable the military prosecutor actually to arrest and prosecute a child as young as 12 years old.
Wow. Simply for resisting an Israeli occupation or supporting Palestinian cause.
Even just if you're publishing your opinion, even as a child, if you dare to share a picture of a martyr or to write any slogan in support of prisoners or martyrs or any kind of political activism, this would be considered incitement for violence, and you could be arrested for a couple of months for such an act.
Now, we also hear of the Israeli occupation treatment of those Palestinian political prisoners in Israeli jails. We hear horror stories, the way they are being interrogated and what they go through, to the torture, ill-treatment, physical and mental abuse. Tell us more about how Israel treats those Palestinian political prisoners.
Actually, the history of torture is a long history in the Israeli interrogation centers against Palestinian prisoners. And they developed from using very primitive physical torture techniques to be using techniques that they would not leave marks even on the body. In the last couple of years, we monitored and documented horrible cases of torture, like the case of Samer Arbid, the detainee who was arrested in 2019. And within less than 48 hours, Samer was hospitalized in a very dangerous situation. He almost died because of the beatings, the kickings, the torture that he was the forcible, stressful tying positions that they were imposing on him to, like, the whole time without enabling him to have any rest or to sleep. So sleep deprivation would be used a lot. Intensive interrogation around the clock with several interrogators, humiliation, bad wording, slapping. They use everything, actually, in order to intimidate and harass your soul and dignity. And as I said, some of the detainees could end up in a hospital in bad conditions. And it's systematic. It's almost used against any Palestinian detainee that would end up in interrogation. Even if you're a child, you would be suffering from different methods of torture. Even if you're a woman or an old man, it doesn't matter. And the more serious thing, that there's no accountability in the Israeli internal legal system. All of these cases of torture, even if we fill complaint, they would close the complaint based on the defense and protection that they needed to interrogate and use these techniques in order to get information. The lack of health treatment is a very serious problem in the Israeli prisons as well. So if you would be arrested while injured, or if you're suffering from a disease, a chronic disease, you wouldn't be treated immediately. And those who are arrested for long, long years and develop chronic diseases inside the prison, it would take years till they would be taken out for the special hospitals, like civil hospitals outside of the prison system, to be treated. In the last 2 years, more than four prisoners died out of health neglect policies. They suffered from cancer, kidney failure, or heart attack inside the prison, and they died, and their bodies, they are still kept with the prison system.
Unbelievable treatment of those political prisoners by the Israeli occupation authority. And to make things worse, COVID-19 in Israel. Or if you could tell us more about how Israel is protecting those Palestinian political prisoners from COVID in Israeli jails.
At the first couple of months of the spread of the virus, the situation was really very worrying, because they didn't take special measures in order to protect the detainees, and lots of detainees were infected, actually, because of the police guards, because of the transfer procedures and so on, because they were not offering them any sanitation, any masks, any needs, special needs, and they insisted to enter to their rooms, like the police usually enter to the rooms of the detainees to count them three times a day. So they were entering to the rooms physically and without masks and counting the detainees. And it took them a while till they started to feel the pressure after the threat of the prisoners to have a hunger strike, actually, because of these measures. And, for example, when they were sending someone to quarantine because he was suspected to be infected, the conditions under quarantine were horrible. Like, he was totally held in a cell without literally anything. No TV, just his clothes and mattress in the room, without any other not books, not TV, nothing. And he would be totally isolated from the other rooms and disconnected totally from the outside world, not able to get family visits or lawyers' visits. And the detainees don't have any access for phone calls. So people who were sent to quarantine were totally under solitary confinement. Some of the children that they were arrested in these months were immediately sent to quarantine till they were checked and were not positive. So at least in one case that we followed, the poor guy, he's almost 17 years old. He was in quarantine for 40 continuous days, because he was always when tested shows positive, but it wasn't correct. And they were repeating the test, and he was totally disconnected. At the end, he was really developing post-traumatic symptoms of because of this solitary confinement he was kept in. And later on, after lots of petitions from the different human rights organizations, Israelis and Palestinian human rights organizations to the High Court, we managed to enforce them to allow phone calls at least, because they totally stopped all family visits. And later on, they included the prisoners in the program of the vaccination, because the first position was that they are not going to vaccinate the prisoners, and then it was criticized a lot in the even in the Israeli media. So they at the end they offered them the vaccine.
You know, back to the children, that is so hard to comprehend, not that it's okay for others, but I was looking at a graph, at a chart, actually it was sourced by your organization, Ad-Damir and Save the Children. It cites that there are more than 12,000 Palestinian children that have been imprisoned since 2000. Most of those children were charged with throwing stones, a crime that is punished by up to 20 years in prison. And in that same chart, it talks about that the Save the Children organization, they asked 470 Palestinian children who have been detained by the Israeli military, the occupation, over the past 10 years, what conditions were like. And they said 81% of them, they said they suffered physical beating. 86% said they were subjected to strip searches. 88% they said they did not receive adequate health care. 89% said they were blindfolded or hooded during detention. 52% of them said they were threatened with harm to their families. And 47% of them said they were denied contact with a lawyer. And these are children. Unbelievable treatment by the so-called the most democratic state in the Middle East, Israel.
Yeah, that's totally true. And imagine if this is what children face in this system, in detention, what would be the adults, what they will face.
Sahar, you mentioned earlier that there were approximately 500 Palestinians in Israeli jails that are under administrative detention. Tell us more about what this administrative detention is and what does it mean?
Actually, it should be highlighted that six of the administrative detainees currently they are under hunger strike because they're opposing this policy. Administrative detention actually is a form of detention that enables the military governor to arrest anyone, actually, including children, by the way, from 1 month up to 6 months based on secret information, which means there's no clear charge or clear evidence in the file. There's no file. They submit to the judge a secret file, which, like, as a lawyer, I'm not allowed to review the information inside this file. And it's just up to the judge to decide whether to confirm the order or to shorten the order or totally cancel it. Mostly they would confirm the order. And this detention order could be renewed based on the same information indefinitely. So by this technique, they can help some people for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, if not more, without being like without the detainee knowing why he's detained and how he's supposed to defend himself. It's a very harsh tool. It affects not just the detainee himself. Imagine the family that they would be waiting every 6 months till the person to be released, and then in the last day or the last week he would be getting the renewal order for another 6 months. It's very harsh, and this is why individuals decided since 2011, actually, it's a continuous action taken by administrative detainees, that they initiate their hunger strike. People like Khadr Adnan, like Hana Shalabi, like so many others, that they were involved in their own individual hunger strike in order to guarantee the end of this form of detention. Currently, there's at least two children that they are held under administrative detention. One of them, Amal Nakhli, he's a 17-year-old boy that he suffered from a very serious medical issue that affects his health. And still, they're detaining him. They extended his administrative detention for another 4 months. And they claim that they check and protect, like, and take care of his medical health. And imagine a 17-year-old boy with such health concerns are held without being able to know what's the real suspicious against him, how he's supposed to defend himself.
You're listening to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Our guest today is Sahar Francis, director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, who is also a human rights lawyer based in Ramallah in occupied Palestine. We are speaking with her about the Palestinian political prisoners held in Israeli jails. We will take a break now, and we will continue our conversation with Sahar Francis shortly. يا موجد فؤادي يما هي حبة عيني جوا الزنزان سمعتك يا أمي تناديني يا موجد فؤادي يما هي حبة عيني قالولي إنك عطشان بردان يما وجوعان قالولي إنك عطشان بردان يما وجوعان قالوا عن صبر أيوب That was a song titled From Inside the Jail Cell by Palestinian singer Mais Shalash. Welcome back to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Our guest today is Sahar Francis, director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, who is also a human rights lawyer based in Ramallah in occupied Palestine. And we are speaking with her about the Palestinian political prisoners held in Israeli jails. Sahar, over the past couple of weeks, the Palestinian political prisoners issue gained worldwide attention after six Palestinian political prisoners escaped from a high security Israeli prison, Jalbua prison. The six Palestinian political prisoners, Mahmoud Arda, Yaqub Qadri, Zakaria Zubedi, Muhammad Arda, Munadil Nfi'at, and Ayham Kamamji. The six Palestinian political prisoners were recaptured since then. Tell us more about this prison escape.
Actually, it was the Monday, 2 weeks ago, when they managed to escape from the Gilboa prison, as you said. Four of them, they are sentenced for life sentences, and two, they are awaiting trial. They are not convicted yet. And the six of them, they did, and just yesterday, I think, the Israeli TV can share pictures from the security service, of course, about the tools they used in order to dig this tunnel. It's amazing how they succeeded over months to do this without bringing any attention from the security guards. And they actually, this is not the first time. It should be pointed that in several occasions, Palestinian prisoners tried to escape the prison. Some of them they managed and they were captured later. Some of them they were killed while trying to capture them. And some managed to escape the country. They went to Jordan or to other countries. So it's always expected that prisoners will try to release themselves. This is not something unique as well for the Palestinian experience. But I think it was bringing much attention because it happened in Gilboa. Gilboa, the prison that was opened in 2004 in the peak years of the Second Intifada, in order to have all those very high security classified prisoners who were sentenced for life sentences in the Second Intifada. And this is why it was a huge issue in the internal context when it comes for the security and how it happened, while this prison is supposed to be one of the best high security prisons. Later, 4 days and 5 days later, four of them, they were rearrested. And of course, immediately they were subjected for lots of violence, beatings and kickings by the police who arrested them, and they were tortured. They were banned from a lawyer visit at the first stage. Just after 4 days, they were allowed to meet their lawyers, and they were reporting to the lawyers that they were facing torture and their interrogation that included sleep deprivation and threatening and stressful position, crying in while under interrogation for long hours with lots of interrogators in the same time shouting and yelling and screaming on them and using very bad words and so on. So this is very typical, and it was expected that they would face lots of violence and torture under interrogation. And they were detained. Tomorrow there were, like, Sunday, it would be the extension of detention hearing in the Nazareth court for them.
You know, I saw that a brief interview on Palestine TV by their lawyer, Khalid Mahajna,
who met Mohammed Arda, one of the Palestinian political prisoners who was rearrested. And like you said, he was talking of horrific beatings, abuse, interrogation around the clock, no sleep for several days, no food for several days. He was just talking of horrific, horrific situations those Palestinian political prisoners are going through in Israeli jails.
I think it's part out of the embarrassing situation that they cause for the whole security system inside the prison and outside the prison. And this is why this intensive, severe conditions of interrogation, especially the before they were captured, the information that was distributed by the security people and the analysts in the Israeli media, lots of incitement against them that they were planning and an attack and terrorist attack, and it seems it was not correct at all, not accurate at all, because when they were arrested, they said clearly we were able to do whatever we like. We were free for 4 or 5 days, and we did nothing because our aim was seeking our freedom, not attacking anyone and not committing any terrorist attack. So I think this is why the pressure as well, and the pressure in order also they were claiming that they were getting support from outside. How come they succeeded to escape without any support? And it seems they were not getting any support from not inside the prison, which means not any other prisoner or any other police personnel, or not outside. And I think this is what caused all this attack as well, beside the fact, the act of the escape itself, in order to pressure them, maybe they will confess by something, and then they would be prosecuted based on the Israeli law that they were having intention to commit another act. So this is, would be a reason to increase their sentence.
There is no doubt it was an extremely brave escape, how they dug that tunnel from the high security Israeli prison. Israel, after that, they moved hundreds of Palestinian political prisoners from the Jalbua prison to unknown locations after that incident. Do we know what's the deal with them now?
Actually, immediately after the news on the escape, the policy of collective punishment was implemented by the prison authority in all Palestinian political prisoners, especially against those affiliated with Islamic Jihad. And immediately from Gilboa, they moved the prisoners affiliated with the Islamic Jihad, distributed them to the other prisons in other sections and different rooms. And this is what caused actually the tension inside all of the prisons. And as we documented in some prisons in Rimon and in Naqab in the desert, the detainees burned some of the cells as an act of resisting this policy to distribute all the Islamic Jihad prisoners for different prisons, which means they would affect them on the level of being living as a group and communicating with each other and so on. Also, they imposed a restriction on the recreation time in all of the prisons. They were locking the prisoners for more than 22 hours a day, not allowing them to go out to the yard, but just for 1 hour or 2 hours, and locking their rooms. And they were canceling the family visits for almost 10 days. And they were threatening that they would take measures against the prisoners by, like, restricting books, restricting canteen needs, and lots of, like, and of course, some of the leaders of the Islamic Jihad were taken for interrogation. Some they were sent for solitary confinement, and all these measures would be considered as collective punishment, because all these prisoners were not involved at all, were not aware, were not part, were not responsible for the escape. But this is the way how usually the prison authority reacts on such events.
Sahar, a few days ago, I think on September 9th, you, your organization at Damir, along with other non-governmental organizations, issued a joint urgent appeal to the United Nations special procedures to safeguard Palestinian political prisoners' rights against collective punishment and retaliatory measures by the Israeli prison services. Tell us more about that, and how has been the response from the UN or other international organizations or governments towards the Palestinian political prisoners' issues, and how Israel treats that?
I think, like as you said, several Palestinian human rights organizations were initiating this urgent appeal, because actually this is the accepted way how we communicate with the special procedures on the UN level, to inform them about any urgent situation, human rights violations, especially when it comes to the prisoner cases. And we were really worried, especially after the burning of the cells. It was so serious that the special units, how they would raid the sections and what they would, how they would injure and affect the prisoners, from our experience, especially from previous accidents in previous years. And this is why we were alerting. And as you said, in the last 2 weeks, the issue of the prisoners took much of attention in the media, in the street, in the international level as well. So we didn't get a direct reaction from the states or the UN, but we know that it could be that they communicated with the Israeli side. And I believe that the whole pressure that came out of all of the different activities in the last 2 weeks in support of the prisoners, this is what led the prison authority to negotiate this week, 2 days ago, with the prisoners, because the prisoners were planning to open a hunger strike yesterday, a general hunger strike, 1,380 were planning to start the strike, and they would be accompanied by the rest of the prisoners in 1 week or so. And actually, the prison authority requested to negotiate with the prisoners, and it seems they promised them to lift all the collective punishments that were imposed. And the prisoners declared that they will have the hunger strike and wait still seeing if the prison authority would really respect their promise, and if not, they will go back to the hunger strike. So I think the international pressure as well supported the prisoners' position. We will keep monitoring to see what things, how things will be developed in the coming 3 weeks.
And what do you think the solution is? Obviously, we know that the whole political Palestinian prisoners issue is a major factor in a future peace deal, whenever that ever happens. Basically, there could never be peace without the release of political prisoners from Israeli jails, amongst many other issues. What do you think is the solution, and why do we have to wait until a final settlement, if that ever is reached, between the Palestinian side and the Israeli side, for the political prisoners to be released? Why isn't there more pressure and more solid? I mean, besides what you've mentioned, Israel is doing that in violation of international law, like, you know, the collective punishment of political prisoners and the torture and the ill treatment and the lack of health. So many things that Israel exercises and does against those Palestinians, it's all against international norms and laws and you name it. Why isn't there more solid reaction or action to suppress Israel's behavior towards the Palestinian political prisoners?
First, let me agree with you that the issue of the prisoners is so central and a very important issue in the Palestinian context. there's no one single house that in Palestine, in the occupied territories, that they didn't experience this harsh experience. And this is why it's very, very important. And it's very important to highlight that there's no peace without releasing all of the Palestinian political prisoners. Why we have to wait? Unfortunately, because there's no accountability for the state of Israel at all, not just on the issue of the prisoners. In all of the serious violations that Israel is committing on a systematic way, the settlements, the house demolitions, the killings, the all the grave violations that the Israeli occupation is committing on a daily basis, there's no accountability at the end of the day. Unfortunately, the UN and the international community, they just condemn and issue statements, but they are not enforcing Israel to respect the international law and their responsibilities as occupiers under international law. And this is why it gives Israel a green light that they can continue with all these violations. So the prisoners issue is part of this policy not paying the price for such grave violation. And this is why we should keep pushing, especially on the level of the International Criminal Court, for example, that even the case of the prisoners should be investigated, not just the settlements or the war on Gaza in 2014. There's other serious violations that were taking place, like torture, the transfer of the prisoners, all these 4,700, the majority of them, they are held inside the state of Israel in violation of the international law. The arbitrary detention, like in the administrative detention cases, the unfair trial procedures in front of these military courts. Thousands of Palestinians were prosecuted in unfair trials. All these are crimes according to the International Criminal Court statute. So the prosecutor should investigate in these grave violations. And this is, would be the powerful message for Israel to stop their crimes and release those prisoners.
And unfortunately, we have seen also Palestinian Authority arresting Palestinian activists, especially in the West Bank. And we have seen several months ago what happened with them going to arrest a Palestinian activist, Nizar Banat, and he was tortured and killed within hours after they took him from his house in the West Bank. Why is that a rise in arrests of Palestinian activists by the Palestinian Authority, those who are against the Palestinian Authority's stance, or what does that stand?
Unfortunately, in the internal level, the situation is so bad as well politically, because the division is still continuing and it affects seriously the political situation, with the fact that the election were postponed again, and this has escalated the tension, and this is what caused the call for demonstrations and the criticism at the first stage against the Palestinian Authority. Nizar Banat was one of the very well-known political activists in the internal discourse against the Palestinian Authority policies, and he was running for the election that were supposed to take place in May. Unfortunately, as you said, he was killed under torture and ill treatment in the moment of his arrest, very short after his arrest, and his death actually caused lots of tension and criticism against the PA, and then they were like launching all these attacks, the security service, the police, and even people who were wearing civil were attacking demonstrators and arresting and harassing, using sexual harassment, which was so like disturbing internally to see where we reached as security forces using sexual harassment in order to, again, especially against women sharing in these demonstrations, in order to cause them to stop sharing in the demonstrations on the streets. But as you know, the Palestinian human rights movement is a strong one, and I think the pressure coming from the other civil society organizations, with the human rights organizations, with the interest of the activists themselves to continue their demonstrations and their criticism. We can say that in the last 2 weeks we are facing a little change. They stopped attacking demonstrations as they did in the last couple of months. But unfortunately, those who were arrested from the demonstrations, they are still facing trial based on very ridiculous charges that were submitted by the prosecution, like causing, I don't know even how to say it in English, this charge that you're saying bad words against high position people in the PA and causing for violent acts between religious, like, this is very ridiculous charges taken from the Jordanian Criminal Act, and there's still actually as well arrest against students or activists that the PA claims they're affiliated with Hamas in the West Bank as a revenge for any kind of arrest or interrogation by Hamas for Fatah activists in the Gaza Strip. This is much related to the division and the political tension between the two sides.
And your organization, Ad-Damir, also, you said earlier in the show, defends Palestinian who are arrested by the Palestinian Authority also, not just Palestinians in Israeli jails, correct?
Yes, we were in the last couple of months with other like lawyers and other organizations that they were also defending and documenting the abuse and the torture and the ill-treatment that these demonstrators faced. And unfortunately, the trial is still continuing. And we also monitoring with the legal team the trial of the military prosecution against 14 security and police personnel who were accused of the killing of Nizar Banat.
Sahar, any last word you'd like to share with our listeners about the Palestinian political prisoners?
I would like to highlight the importance of the solidarity and the awareness and the support to the calls of the Palestinian prisoners whenever they initiate a hunger strike or any other mass campaign that they call in order to change their conditions or in order to release them and to end the policy of administrative detention, for example. I think it's very important to keep in mind the similarities between the oppression, the torture, and the different policies that is used in the prisons in the United States and in Israel. Because I think as the states join information and practices and develop strategies to oppress people, the people should join efforts in order to face these policies and violations. And I think this is would be my message to the listeners.
Very well. And I know your website is a great resource and has a lot of information about the Palestinian political prisoners. Could you share that with our listeners?
It's www.addamir.ps.
And we will have, yes, and we will have a link to that on our website, arabvoices.net. The only time I have left is to thank our guest today, Sahar Francis, director of Ad-Damir, Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, who is also a human rights lawyer. She was speaking with us from Ramallah in occupied Palestine. Thank you, Sahar, so much. We greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Je revois la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series. Join KBOO in celebrating and paying tribute to the contributions and enriching influences of Hispanic and Latinx Americans and their ancestors. You'll hear from volunteer producers from Buscando America, Boogie Pachanguero, Noticias en Español, and more. Again, that's KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series, every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th. Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Democracy is an experiment.